Let's look at figure 16, the area forecast. I want to point out the important part of this graphic. See where it says Chicago, CHICFA 24, 1945, there toward the center? Well, underneath that, the 24th is the day that the report was prepared at 1945. Question: the Chicago forecast section is valid until the 25th at. Well, the forecast section is not the synopsis section. The forecast section is clouds, weather, valid until 25.0800. It's valid until the 25th at 08 Zulu. Now, further down, you see where it says Upper Michigan, western portions? What type of sky condition and obstructions division are forecast for Upper Michigan in the western portions from 02 Zulu until 05 Zulu? Upper Michigan, western portions, near the end of that first line there, 02 to 05 Zulu, becoming ceilings overcast 1,000, visibilities 3 to 5 statute miles BR. BR means mist. It's one of those terms like FU is smoke, FUMAR, FUMAR. Ceiling becoming 1,000 feet overcast with visibility 3 to 5 statute miles in mist. Let's look at Upper Michigan eastern portions. See the eastern portions? What sky condition and visibility is forecast in the eastern portions of Upper Michigan after 23 Zulu? Well, the bottom line of the eastern portion, the last line, or the second line under eastern portion, it says 23 Zulu, ceiling, overcast, 1,000, visibility, 3 to 5 statute miles, dash RA, BR. That means light rain and mist. That's a minus sign. One more. Let's look at Indiana, southern half of Indiana. What is the outlook for the southern half of Indiana after 07 Zulu? Very bottom of the page, Indiana. We have a northern half and a southern half. The end of the first line, 07 Zulu, AGL, scattered 3,000, scattered 10,000, outlook VFR. It's VFR. These area forecasts are used to forecast en route weather and interpolate weather at airports that do not have terminal forecasts. So if I were to ask you from which primary source should information be obtained regarding expected weather at the estimated time of arrival if your destination has no terminal forecast, area forecast. To determine general forecast weather conditions over several states, you should refer to the aviation area forecasts. The section entitled Significant Clouds and Weather is a general description of clouds and weather which cover an area greater than 3,000 square miles and is significant to VFR flight operations. The area forecast also makes reference to AirMets. See AirMet Sierra for IFR conditions and mountain obscurations. AirMets are found in the in-flight aviation weather advisories. So if I were to ask you to determine the freezing level and areas of probable icing aloft, you would refer to the in-flight aviation weather advisories. Does anyone have any questions regarding any of these figures that we've covered so far? If you do, please email me. I will respond to your email and I will answer your question. Let's move on now to figure 17. Figure 17 is the winds and temperatures aloft forecast. The thing you have to know about figure 17, that the values in the winds aloft forecasts are all relative to true north, and the speed is in knots. You have to know how to interpret what those wind velocities and directions indicate. The temperatures are all negative, above 24,000. That's printed on the figure. So let's look at a couple of these, okay? If the wind is light and variable, less than 5 knots, what it'll read is 9900. Let's look at St. Louis, STL at 12,000 feet. Can you read that? 230 at 39. That's 230 degrees true at 39. A couple more questions on St. Louis, and then we'll move on to Denver and MKC, and we'll be done with figure 17. What is the wind forecast at St. Louis at 9,000 feet, 230 at 32? Figure 17, what's the wind forecast for St. Louis at 12,000? 12,000, 12,000 is phraseology. St. Louis, 12,000 feet, 230 degrees true at 39 knots. Now let's look at Denver, D-E-N. Denver, 9,000 feet. 230 degrees true at 21 knots, temperature minus 4 degrees Celsius. Finally, MKC, Kansas City, 6,000 feet, 200 degrees at 6, temperature plus 3 Celsius. Remember, it's relative to true north, so all the winds are true and the speed is in knots. Figure 18, the weather depiction chart. Of what value is the weather depiction chart? It's for determining general weather conditions on which to base flight planning. You see near the upper part of the chart, there's that line with those sharp triangles pointing downward. What's the status of that front that extends from Nebraska through the upper peninsula of Michigan? Well, that's a cold front. Look at northern Texas. The IFR weather in northern Texas is due to low ceilings. The way we know that is this weather depiction chart has areas that are not outlined by any kind of contour at all. Then there's a single contour line which outlines areas of marginal VFR weather. Then there's another area of contour lines that has shading. Those are areas of IFR weather. In those areas there are circles, and the circles represent the cloud cover. The visibility is to the left of the circle, and underneath the circle is the cloud height. There's also a symbol to the left of the circle which indicates the obstruction to vision. Northern Texas, we have IFR conditions and fog because we have a equal sign, and it looks like the visibility is 1.5 miles to 2.5 miles in fog in northern Texas. While we're in the Texas area, let's look just to the northeast of Texas, to Oklahoma, and answer the question, what weather phenomenon causes IFR conditions in central Oklahoma? Well, we see there's IFR conditions there. It's the same part that's near northern Texas. And we know that it's low ceilings and visibilities because the contour area with shading indicates IFR conditions. IFR conditions means the ceiling is less than 1,000 feet and or the visibility is less than 3 miles. The areas of the contour without the shading is marginal VFR, ceilings 1,000 to 3,000 feet and visibilities 1 to 3 miles. The areas without shading, such as if you look at southern Michigan to northern Indiana, there's no contours. That indicates VFR conditions, ceilings greater than 3,000 feet with visibilities greater than 5 miles. And finally, let's look over to Kentucky. Look at the marginal weather in central Kentucky. And that's due to what? It's due to low ceilings. The visibility is normally entered on the left side of the weather symbol, but since the visibility is omitted, we know the visibilities are greater than 6 miles. Therefore, the marginal weather has got to be due to ceilings. Figure 19 is the radar summary chart. That fills up your whole screen. It's 1024 by 768. You can scroll around with the arrow keys up, down, left, and right to look at all the areas on this chart. But I would like you to turn your attention to Area B. We're going to look at Area B, talk about it a little bit. And we're going to look at Area D and E. So let's look at Area B. In Area B, I want to know two things. I want to know what type of weather is occurring with that type of radar return, and I want to know what is the top of the precipitation of the radar return. Well, you see the R next to the echo, right next to the letter B? That indicates rain. there's a line pointing to the lower part of the cell that has the numbers 240 that's underlined. That means that the top of the precipitation is 24,000 feet MSL. Now let's go on over to the right of the chart to area E. From what you've already learned, can you tell me what the top of the precipitation of the cell is in area E? Look at area E for a top indicator. See any numbers underlined in area E? See the 160 underlined pointing to that cell near area E? Well, that means the top of that precipitation is 16,000 MSL. And right next to area E is area D. What's the direction and speed of the movement of the cell in area D? Well, there's an arrow pointing to the north at 17 knots, so it's moving north at 17 knots. On this particular chart, we don't have a large rectangular box, but if you were to see a large rectangular box on the radar summary chart, that would refer to the severe weather watch area. Area B, the R, that means continuous rain. Two more things I want to tell you about the radar summary chart. It's a unique chart. There's information on the radar summary chart that you're not going to find anywhere else. Do you know what that information is? Lines and cells of hazardous thunderstorms. The other thing about the radar chart that's very interesting, or I'll use FAA written test phraseology, radar weather reports are of special interest because they indicate location of precipitation along with the type, intensity, and cell movement of the precipitation. The radar reports that I speak of are used to create the radar summary chart. There is no example of a radar weather report on the written test. All we have to work with here is the radar summary chart. You are asked that one question about radar weather reports, that radar weather reports are of special interest to pilots because they indicate location of precipitation along with type, intensity, and cell movement of precipitation. Let's look at Figure 20, Significant Weather Prognostic Chart. And the two areas that we're going to focus on this chart are Utah and Florida. So let's go to Utah. You see the enclosed shaded area associated with the low pressure system over northern Utah? Look at the bottom left panel. And you see there's a double asterisk in the bottom left panel. That indicates continuous snow. So if I were to ask you about the enclosed shaded area associated with the low pressure system over northern Utah, you would know that it is forecast to have continuous snow. Those asterisks are not in the area. They're actually outside the area, but there's an arrow that points them into the shaded area. There's not enough room. It would be too cluttered if they were put in that area. Continuous snow. Figure 20 has a 12-hour and a 24-hour look ahead. The left panel is the 12-hour, and the right panel is the 24-hour. Well, the lower panels are both the surface. The upper panels are surface to 24,000. It says surface to 400 millibars, but that's what 24,000 is, 400 millibars. So, Utah, 12-hour significant weather prognostic chart. Interpret the weather symbol, if you will, that's depicted on the 12-hour significant weather prog chart in Utah. The symbol has the numbers 180. That means that there is moderate turbulence from the surface to 18,000 feet. All right, now let's go to Florida. Both upper panels, Florida is outlined by a scalloped line. The scalloped line says that the visibility is 3 to 5 miles. It's marginal VFR, ceilings 1 to 3,000 feet. Now, knowing that, if I were to ask you what weather is forecast for the Florida area just ahead of the stationary front during the first 12 hours, Well, you see on the lower panel, there is a stationary front. And what weather is forecast ahead of the stationary front? You have to look at both panels to answer the question, because I'm dealing with the first 12 hours. It was in my question. So look at the left panel. The top panel shows that the weather is marginal VFR. The bottom panel shows the symbol for rain. You see the shaded area with the three circles, or the three dots? That's rain. So the answer is ceilings 1 to 3,000 feet and or visibility 3 to 5 miles with continuous precipitation. One more question regarding Florida. On the 12-hour panel, what is the freezing level over Florida? 12-hour panel is on the left. The freezing level is on the upper panel. There's a dashed line showing that the freezing level is above mean sea level, and the numbers 120 are next to it. That's indicating that the freezing level is 12,000 feet. And that concludes the discussion of these significant weather prognostic. Now let's move on to figure number 21. Let's refer to figure 21, and let's go to area 4 near the bottom of the chart. Notice there's a area that's outlined by blue, a blue solid blue line with blue shading on the inside. It says R5302B. What hazards to aircraft may exist in restricted areas such as 5302B? Remember from the discussion, restricted area is an area where there's unusual, often invisible hazards such as aerial gunnery or guided missiles. You definitely want to stay away from restricted areas. If you want to fly through a restricted area for some reason, you need to get permission. But remember that it's unusual, often invisible hazard in that area. You didn't really need to look at the sectional chart excerpt to know that, but the question does direct you to the figure 21, so we're looking at it here. In the vicinity of Area 4, there's a little airport there, Northeastern Regional. It has no control tower. It has a UNICOM frequency, because it says 123.0. Going up to the northeast of that is a control tower field, Elizabeth City. Looks like it's a Coast Guard air station, CGAS, ASOS, ASOS, Automated Surface Observation System, on frequency 118.52. There's another question on figure 21. Look at area 3. What's the recommended communications procedure for landing at Currituck County Airport? Well, you see it's an uncontrolled field. There's no control tower there. And it has a frequency 122.9, and that's multicom frequency, which means there's no radio based on the ground. It's an air-to-air frequency that you use when you arrive and depart. And so what you would do is transmit your intentions on 122.9 when you're 10 miles out and give position reports in the traffic pattern. That's what the test is looking for. In reality, you'd also transmit your taxi intention and your departure intention if you're on the ground leaving the airport. Notice magenta tint surrounding Currituck County Airport. Looks kind of like a keyhole pattern. It connects to a magenta tint surrounding Elizabeth County Airport as well. That magenta tint is telling you that Class E airspace begins at 700 feet above the ground when you're within that tinted area. Outside of that tinted area, Class E airspace begins at 1,200 feet. There's another question on the test regarding Figure 21. The question asks you to determine the magnetic course from First Flight Airport, which is Area 5, the far lower right-hand corner, to Hampton Roads Airport, Area 2. And Hampton Roads Airport is in the upper part of the diagram over to the left. It's west of Norfolk. Let's talk about how you would do that. The question is pretty easy. It's asking you to determine your magnetic course. And the magnetic course, as you know, is your true course plus or minus magnetic variation. Now, we know that east is least and west is best. So you measure your true course and then you subtract easterly variation, or you'd add westerly variation. On this chart, there's an isogonic line that runs diagonally across the chart from the top of the chart near the left edge across just to the right of Elizabeth City VOR, and it goes down, it exits the chart at the bottom right through the sign that says caution unmarked balloon on cable to 3000 MSL. It's 10 degrees westerly variation. So once we measure the true course, we would add 10 degrees westerly variation and we would come up with a magnetic course. So draw a straight line between the two airports with your plotter, and then take the straight edge of the plotter and hold it parallel to the course and move the plotter along the course in order to place the small hole in the center as near to the halfway point of the course as possible. The true course is the angle measured between the north meridian and the course line. If you position the plotter correctly and you read the true course, you'll see that it's about 321 degrees. And then you add 10 degrees westerly variation and you get a magnetic course of 331 degrees. And that's the answer. Say you take off out of Hampton Roads Airport, you go to the north, you do some sightseeing, and then you're going to fly back to First Flight Airport, and you're going to fly right over Hampton Roads Airport and right over Chesapeake Municipal Airport. And you want to figure out what time you're going to arrive at First Flight. So you're en route, you're at cruise, over Hampton Roads Airport, you look at the time and you see it's 14:56. So you write down 14:56. And then over Chesapeake Municipal, it's 15:01. So you write down 15:01. It's 5 minutes. And you ask yourself, what time should your flight arrive at First Flight? When you plotted this out, you may have picked Chesapeake as a waypoint on your way up there. So you may or may not know that it's 10 miles from Hampton Roads Airport, and you've got another 50 miles to go after that. You've covered 10 miles in 5 minutes. That's 2 miles a minute. And you've got 50 miles to go, so it should take you another 25 minutes. So if you add 25 minutes to 15:01, you get 15:26. That's the time your flight should arrive at First Flight. What is the approximate latitude of Currituck County Airport? And yeah, you probably would just look it up in the airport facilities directory if you had it, but let me show you how to find it with a chart. If you use your up and down arrow to scroll around the chart, you'll see that Currituck County Airport is located next to a meridian of longitude. See that? Now, those meridians of longitude are very well marked. Each tick mark on a meridian of longitude is 1 nautical mile. So what we're going to do is look for a reference point. Where are we in terms of latitude? Well, if we scroll down, we don't see that there's a line of latitude below us that we can pick up. Ah, there it is. Yeah, 36 degrees. 36 degrees is off the chart on the bottom. The horizontal line going from left to right above Currituck County Airport is 36 degrees, 30 minutes. And so there should be another one above that that says 37 degrees. And sure enough, there it is, north of Virginia Beach, that's 37 degrees. So the line above Currituck County Airport is 36 degrees, 30 minutes. Now, along the line of longitude, you'll see a large tick mark that's located right above where it says caution unmarked balloon on cable to 3000 MSL. It's also on the compass rose of the Elizabeth City VOR DME. Each of those hash marks is 10 minutes. So, of course, there's 60 minutes per degree. Each degree is 60 nautical miles. And each large hash mark is 10 minutes. So 36 degrees is right at the bottom of the chart. And then you got a hash mark at the VOR DME compass rose. And that's 36 degrees, 10 minutes. There's another one above that, which is just to the right of the big number 3. That's 36 degrees, 20 minutes. And of course, 36 degrees, 30 minutes is that long horizontal line running across the chart. So it's about 36 degrees, 10, 20, 1, 2, 3, 36 degrees, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, about 24 minutes, 36 degrees, 24 minutes north. If it were 36 degrees 25 minutes north, it would be exactly halfway between that hash mark, that's just to the right of the big number 3, and the 3630 line of latitude, which is above it. So the answer is 36 degrees 24 minutes north latitude. Let's refer again to figure 21, area 1, and I've got a question. What minimum radio equipment is required to land and take off at Norfolk International Airport? Look at the top there, Area 1 Norfolk. It's a little blue airport symbol in the center of those circles. Outermost circle looks like it's the compass rose of the Norfolk VORTAC. Just inside of that is a magenta circle, and the magenta circle symbolizes that the airspace surrounding Norfolk Airport is Class Charlie airspace. In fact, there's two airports there. There's NS Norfolk, and there's Norfolk International. Looks like the airport above Norfolk is NS Naval Station Norfolk November Golf Uniform, and then there's Norfolk Oscar Romeo Foxtrot. The airspace surrounding it is a Class Charlie airspace. We need to contact Norfolk Approach Control within 20 nautical miles, so we need a two-way radio. And there's another thing we need. We need a Mode C transponder. We do not need an Omni receiver. We don't need an Omni receiver with DME. All we need is a two-way radio and a Mode C transponder. Why? Because that's Class Charlie airspace. We talked about Class Charlie airspace. Here it is graphically depicted now in Figure 21. The upper limit of that airspace is 4,000 feet. There are a couple of lower limits. They're printed on the chart. You see where it says up at Newport News that Norfolk November Golf Uniform, it's the naval station, top is 4,000, the base over the naval station is 2,000, and the top is 4,000, the base is at the surface over Norfolk International. Then there's an outer area where the big number one is, dark number one. The value for that, I don't see it there. Underneath Norfolk, there's an area that has a top of 4,000 and a base of 1,200. That's a shelf area. That outer circle is now called a shelf area, and it has a base of 1,200 feet, and it goes up to 4,000 feet. Those are the dimensions and limits of this particular Class Charlie airspace. Also, surrounding this Class Charlie airspace is a magenta tint, just like we had at Currituck County Airport. And that magenta tint means that, approximately around the same dimension, it's a little bit wider over the vicinity of Oceana Naval Air Station in Virginia Beach. But that's telling you that the floor of Class Echo airspace is 700 feet within that area. There's also a Class Echo surface area and a Class Delta area over Virginia Beach. But the outermost band is a magenta band when you have Class E airspace, Class Echo airspace, beginning at 700 feet. On the other side of that, of course, Class E airspace begins at 1,200 feet. I also want you to notice there's a white border that surrounds Norfolk. It comes down from the top of the chart on the left and the right side of Norfolk, and then it makes a nice neat bend and comes around the bottom, and it has the word inset in it. Part of this airspace is reprinted on another part of the chart in greater detail. What you're looking at is a sectional aeronautical chart. The scale is 1 to half a million, and the inset has a scale of 1 to 250,000. So those details are a lot more visible if you looked at the inset. The VFR checkpoints will pop out at you. You could see frequencies a little better. When there's so much information in a small area like that, an inset is published. We're not going to look at it because we don't have access to it, but that's what that white area is. Figure 22, Area 1. On what frequency can you receive hazardous in-flight weather advisory service in the vicinity of Area 1? In other words, what frequency do you receive HIWAS? Well, we look for a frequency communications box. And there's a box that says VORTAC MINUT 117.1. Now, the 117.1 is underlined. If the VOR frequency is underlined, there's no voice capability on that frequency. What that means is there's no two-way voice communications on the frequency. The flight service station can still transmit transcribed weather broadcasts and HIWAS on those frequencies, but you can't use it for listening to the flight service station. In fact, in this particular case, the frequency box on top is for communicating with the Grand Forks flight service station. The word Grand Forks is in the brackets under the box. That's the controlling flight service station that operates the remote communications outlet from the Minot VORTAC. And the H in the upper right-hand corner of the box indicates that HIWAS is available on the VOR frequency 117.1. The Minot VORTAC is right on the airport. There's a control tower field there, 118.2. There's an asterisk next to the control tower frequency, which means the tower is part-time. And then the letter C means that's the common traffic advisory frequency. The airport is 1,716 feet above sea level, and it has lighting, pilot-controlled lighting, and the longest runway is 7,500 feet. Other frequency is 122.905. That's the UNICOM frequency. See, the airport is 1,716 feet above sea level. It has pilot-controlled lighting, or part-time lighting, or lighting on request. I guess the star next to the L. The longest runway is 7,500 feet. The UNICOM is frequency 122.95. That's an airport of entry. Actually, the L with the star means that there's some limitations on the lighting, and you need to refer to the airport facilities directory. It may be lighting, could be part-time, it could be on request. The question I have is, say you're approaching Minot from the south. Say you're approaching from Area 3 at the base of the chart. What course should be selected on the OBS to make a direct flight from Mercer County Regional Airport, which is the airport in the lower left-hand corner of the chart, to the Minot VORTAC with a 2 indication? Well, you'll be heading basically north, going to the VORTAC, and you want the OBS course selector to agree with your heading indicator, so it should be pretty much a northbound course should be selected. One of the answer choices is 359 degrees. Well, that's pretty north. That's the one I would choose. You want the OBS indicator to agree with the heading indicator if you're going to or from a VORTAC. Question that asks which public use airports depicted are indicated as having fuel. Services and fuel available are depicted by tick marks on the basic airport symbol. Normal working hours are Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. local time. Consult the airport facility directory for service availability at airports with hard surface runways greater than 8,069 feet. And then the star next to the airport symbol indicates a rotating beacon in operation sunset to sunrise. Well, services available are indicated by tick marks, so let's look at our figure and see what airports have tick marks. The answer choices are Minot International and Mercer County Regional Airport, Area 3. Well, Minot International certainly has tick marks, and that has services and fuel. What about Mercer County Regional Airport, Area 3? Let's go look at Area 3, Mercer County Regional Airport. And there's an airport symbol. There are tick marks, so yes. Let's see, can there be a more correct answer? Minot International and Garrison, Area 2. Well, Garrison is just above the lake, and there's that lake in the lower part of the chart. That's Audubon Lake. And Garrison does not have tick marks, so it's not Garrison. Minot International and Mercer County Regional Airport. What type of military flight operations should a pilot expect along IR-644? Well, let's take a look at IR-644. Look at the bottom of the chart, right above Mercer County Regional Airport. Actually, it's above controlled airspace shading, where controlled airspace begins at 700 feet above Mercer County Airport. There's an IR644 that goes horizontally across the chart, and then it takes an abrupt turn to the northeast. Actually, it says IR644-649. When we talked about IRs and VRs, those are military training routes, and IRs are operated under instrument flight rules regardless of weather conditions. If it is a three-digit number, it means that the flights are operating above and below 1,500 feet AGL. And if they have a four-digit number, then no segment is above 1,500 feet. They're going to be 1,500 feet and below. So these are three-digit numbers, so the flights are operating above and below 1,500 feet. And they're operating regardless of weather conditions. So the answer is IFR training flights above 1,500 feet AGL in speeds in excess of 250 knots. The way I remember these is that if the route has more numbers, that means that it's lower. Think of the numbers in the military training route as air molecules. There are always more air molecules closer to the surface. The higher you go, the fewer air molecules there are. So if the military training route is only a three-letter route, that means that operations are above 1,500 feet. And if there are four-letter routes, that means that they're below 1,500 feet. What is the CTEF multicom frequency for Garrison Airport? Well, there, the word multicom gave it away. It's 122.9. It's on the chart next to the Garrison Airport, just above the lake there, Audubon Lake. Multicom is what you have at airports where there's no flight service station, no UNICOM, and no tower. We know what a tower is. We know what a flight service station is. We know a UNICOM means that there may or may not be someone there. It's a radio on a table somewhere in an office. If there's someone there, they may or may not hear the radio and reply. That's UNICOM. And it's used for self-announcing your position when you're inbound and outbound. And it's used for calling for fuel and services. 122.9 is multicom. There's no one there. There may or may not be a radio there, but it certainly would not be attended. And everyone self-announces and just talks to each other on 122.9. That's multicom frequency. Oh, here's another navigation problem. Refer to figure 22. What is the estimated time en route from Mercer County Regional Airport, Area 3, to Minot International, Area 1? Well, we know that we're going to put our VOR on 359 degrees, right? Because we already talked about that. So that's your magnetic course. The wind is from 330 degrees true at 25 knots. And the true airspeed is 100 knots. Now we're going to add 3.5 minutes for departure and climb out. The way we solve this problem is we measure the true course between the two points is approximately 011 degrees. And we're going to determine our ground speed using the flight computer. Remember the back side of the flight computer had the wind computer on the back of that? So we're going to set the wind direction opposite the index on the back, rotate the plotting disk so that the wind direction is opposite the true index, 330 degrees. And then we're going to mark the wind speed 25 knots up from the grommet. So we'll put the grommet on 100 knots and we'll mark 25 up from that. Then we'll rotate the wind computer to our true course of 011. And we'll slide our true airspeed of 100 knots over the wind mark and read our ground speed over the grommet. And it looks like the ground speed is around 80 knots. Now the distance that we measured with our plotter between the two points, the distance is 59 nautical miles. So if we're doing 80 knots, how long will it take us to travel 59 nautical miles? Well, I'll take out my little handy-dandy calculator here, and we'll do 59 divided by 80 equals 0.73 hours. So 0.73 hours times 60 is 44.2 minutes. We'll write that down, 44.2 minutes. Then we'll add our 3.5 minutes 23.5 and we'll come out with 47.7 minutes. Well, one of the answer choices is 48 minutes, and that's the one I would choose. That's how you calculate your estimated time en route. Okay, here's a good one. Refer to Figure 22, Area 2. Which airport is located at approximately 47 degrees, 39 minutes, 30 seconds north latitude? Well, I'm going to copy it down. I'm just going to copy the degrees in minutes, okay? So I'm going to write 47, 39, and then our longitude is 100 degrees, 53 minutes. So 47:39:10053. Well, if you look at the chart for a line of latitude, you'll see that 48 degrees is clearly marked about two-thirds of the way up the chart. So anything south of that is going to be less than 48 degrees, and anything north of that is going to be more than 48 degrees. And then we see a line of longitude pretty close to it, 101 degrees west longitude. We know that anything to the left of that line is going to be more than 101 degrees, and anything to the east of that line is going to be less than 101 degrees. So the question is asking us, what airport is at 100 degrees 53 minutes? Well, that means it's not quite at 101 degrees, so it's going to be east of the 101. And then the latitude is 47:39, so there's 48. The line underneath that, the horizontal line that's running along the bottom of the lake, is 47:30. So 47:40 is going to be 10 miles north of that line. Now there's 30 miles between those two lines of latitude. Each tick mark along the line of longitude is 1 nautical mile. So all we need to do is count up 9 tick marks from the 47:30. And then we're going to go over 7 tick marks to the right of that. So if we go up 9 tick marks and we go across 7 tick marks, we get to Crooked Lake Airport. That's how that works. Now we're out west. This is Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. A mountainous area. Notice the longitude. We're now west of 116 degrees. And we're at 48 degrees north latitude. Let's find out what questions there are pertaining to Figure 23. Before I do that, I want to point out a couple of things. Notice the terrain. Much higher terrain. It's brown. Notice near the center of the chart to the northeast of Coeur d'Alene, there's a glider symbol with the letter G in there and a parachute. Well, there's a question that asks you to refer to Figure 23, Section 2. And it asks you for information about parachute jumping and glider operations at Silverwood Airport, is indicated in the Airport Facilities Directory. Look at this chart and refer to Area 2. At Coeur d'Alene, which frequency should be used as a common traffic advisory frequency to self-announce positions and intentions? Well, you just look at Coeur d'Alene and you look for the frequency there, and you see it says Coeur d'Alene, Charlie, Oscar, Echo. Underneath that is the AWOS, A-W-O-S, Automated Weather Observation System. And then underneath that is a frequency, 122.8, with the letter C in a circle. Well, the 122.8 means that's your UNICOM frequency, and the C with the circle means that UNICOM frequency is the Common Traffic Advisory Frequency. Coeur d'Alene is a magenta airport symbol with tick marks and a star, so it has a rotating beacon and services. It also has a UNICOM. There's no control tower there, and there's no flight service station. There's a box indicating that there's a VOR DME located, Coeur d'Alene VOR DME, and it looks like the Boise Flight Service Station has a remote communications outlet on frequency 122.05, so you can call the Boise Flight Service Station. You would say Boise Radio, and you can use that frequency to open or close your VFR flight plan or to get information about warning areas or military operations areas or to get a weather briefing. I found several questions asking for the same information in different ways. At Quarter Lane, which frequency should be used as the common traffic advisory frequency to monitor airport traffic? What is the correct UNICOM frequency to be used at Quarter Lane to request fuel? Well, it's this common traffic advisory frequency, which is the UNICOM frequency, which is 122.8. There's a navigation question here that asks you to determine the magnetic heading for a flight from Sandpoint Airport Area 1, which is at the top of the chart, to St. Mary's Airport Area 4, which is at the bottom of the chart. Gives you the wind is 215 degrees at 25 and the true airspeed is 125 knots. Looking at that course line, it's right next to a line of longitude, and both airports are about the same distance from that line of longitude. It looks like Sandpoint Airport is slightly, just a little bit further to the east than St. Mary's Airport. So I would say that my true course is about pretty much 180, maybe 181. Okay, let's put a plotter on the course. Let's draw the line. Put the plotter on there, and it's 181 degrees. So our true course is 181 degrees. And now let's solve for true heading by using the flight computer. The wind direction is 215 degrees, so we'll rotate the plotter to put the wind direction opposite the true index. We'll mark the wind velocity up from the grommet 25 knots, and then we'll rotate the plotter to put our true course 181 degrees opposite the true index, and we'll slide our plotter to put the true airspeed dot at 125. We'll read our ground speed from the grommet. We don't need the ground speed because all we're determining is magnetic heading. Looks like our wind correction angle is 6 degrees right. So we'll add 6 degrees to 181. So our true heading is 187 degrees. We'll subtract our 18 degrees magnetic variation from 187, and we'll come up with a magnetic heading of 169 degrees. And that is one of the answer choices. That's the correct answer. Another question asks for the same information, what's your magnetic heading? And this time we're going from Priest River Airport, Area 1, which is to the west of Sandpoint. From there we're going to Shoshone County Airport, Area 3, which is, there it is. And the wind is from 030 at 12, and the true airspeed is 95 knots. Let's draw our course line. Put our plotter on the course line and measure a true course of 144 degrees, maybe 143. And then we'll take our wind and we'll set our wind direction opposite the true index. We'll mark our wind velocity up from the grommet. We'll take our true course of 144. I'll make it 143. And we'll rotate the computer to set 143 opposite the true index. We don't need our ground speed. Our wind correction angle is 7 degrees left, so we'll minus 7 degrees from 143, and our true heading is 136 degrees. Minus 18 degrees easterly variation is 118. Magnetic heading is 118 degrees. That's the answer. There's another question that asks for the magnetic heading from St. Mary's Airport to Priest River Airport. So this will be a flight from Area 4 at the bottom of the page to Area 1 at the top of the page. Be a northwesterly true course. And we measure the true course with the plotter, and we get about 345 degrees. And what do we have for wind here? Wind is from 340 degrees at 10 knots, and the true airspeed is 90 knots. So, let's see, 340, set our wind at 340, mark it up 10 knots. True course is 345. Our wind correction angle is 1 degree left, so we'll minus 1 degree wind correction angle for a true heading of 344. And then we take away our magnetic variation, minus our magnetic variation of 18 degrees east, and we get 325, 326. And the answer choice is 327. That's close enough. Okay, finally, there's a time en route question here. So we want to know, what is the estimated time en route from Sandpoint Airport to St. Marie's Airport? So Sandpoint is at the top. St. Marie's is at the bottom. I think we've already plotted that course. It's about 181 degrees, true course. Okay, 181 degrees. We have to determine our ground speed. Set our wind speed opposite our true index. We mark our wind velocity up from the grommet. Wind is from 215 degrees at 25 knots. And then we'll rotate the plotter so that the true course of 181 degrees is opposite the true index. We'll slide our plotter so that the wind speed grommet is opposite the true airspeed of 125 knots, and we'll read our ground speed under the grommet, and looks like our ground speed is going to be about 104 knots, 103, 104 knots. And then the distance from Sandpoint Airport to St. Marie's Airport, when we measure that with our plotter, we get about 58 miles. And we can use our flight computer, and we can, you know, set our speed index. We know what our ground speed is, so it's 104. And then under 58 miles, we can read about 34 minutes. Or we can use our calculator here, and we can take our distance, which is 58 miles, divided by our ground speed, which is 104. And that gives us our time, which is 0.55 hours. So we multiply that times 60, and we get 33.46 minutes. Look at the answer choices, and 34 minutes. Hey, there's our answer. Okay, what's our estimated time en route going to be from Priest River Airport to Shoshone County Airport? The wind is from 030 at 12, and the true airspeed is 95 knots. Add 2 minutes for climb out. Okay, let's measure the true course. Put our plotter on a line between Priest River Airport and Shoshone County Airport. And our true course is 144 degrees. We'll rotate our plotter so that our wind direction is opposite the true index. We'll mark our wind speed up from the grommet, 12 knots. We'll turn our true course over to 144. We'll slide our wind dot opposite our true airspeed of 95 knots. And we'll read our ground speed of 99 knots. And the distance is 49 nautical miles. So 49 divided by 99 equals 0.49 times 60, and it's 29.6 minutes. Well, let's make it 30 minutes. Plus we're going to add 2 minutes for climb out. 31 minutes is the correct answer. I believe there's one more question regarding figure 23, and that is, what is your estimated time en route from St. Marie's Airport, Area 4, to Priest River Airport, Area 1? The wind is from 300 at 14. The true airspeed is 90 knots, and we'll add 3 minutes for climb out. Okay, so we'll plot the course and measure the distance, plug in the wind. True course from St. Marie's Airport to Priest River Airport is 345 degrees. Take our ground speed computer on the back here, and we'll set our wind direction opposite the true index, mark our wind speed up from the grommet, rotate our true course, slide our grommet over the airspeed. We'll read our ground speed of 79, I'll make it 80 knots. Distance is 53 miles. 53 divided by 80 times 60 is 39.75 minutes. Make it 40 minutes. And we're going to add 3 minutes for climb out, so make it 43 minutes. I say 43 minutes is the correct answer. Huh. I found another question on figure 23. Let's look at area 3 and answer this question. The vertical limits of that portion of Class E airspace designated as a federal airway over McGee Airport are? Well, you see that Victor Airway that runs right over McGee Airport? And we told you that that's Class E airspace, and that normally begins at 1,200 feet above the ground. The height of those Victor Airways go up to 18,000 feet, actually 17,999 feet, because once you're at 18,000 feet, you're at a flight level, 180, and that's Class Alpha airspace. These Victor Airways are from 1,200 AGL to 17,999. By golly, that's one of the answer choices. 1,200 AGL to 17,999. You know, since we're talking about airspace and we're looking at figure 23, and since those were all the questions on figure 23, I have a question. Where does controlled airspace begin on this chart? Looking at the chart, there's an airport at the north, Sandpoint Airport. It has a magenta shading. Well, we know what that means. It means that Class E airspace, controlled airspace, begins at 700 feet when you're within the magenta shading, and when you're outside of that shading, it begins at 1,200 feet. So, except for the areas where the shading is magenta, Class E airspace in this area begins at 1,200 feet. Around Coeur d'Alene Airport, there's a magenta dashed keyhole shaped symbol. That is a Class Echo surface area. Class E surface area. You have to look at the NOTAMS directory for the effective hours of that Class E surface area. And that means that Class E airspace begins at the ground when that Class E surface area is effective. When it's not effective, where does Class E airspace begin? It begins at 700 feet because there's a shading around Coeur d'Alene Airport that indicates that Class E airspace begins at 700 feet. Notice also the Coeur d'Alene VORDME has HIWAS available on 108.8, and also the Boise Flight Service Station has a remote outlet through the Coeur d'Alene VOR on frequency 122.05. All right, we're done with figure 23. So we can go to figure 24.